headlights on for safety, please. Wind south at 8, 45 degrees Kenosha, 44 in Racine. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. It is 10 past 8. The morning show with Greg Berg is next. Welcome you to the Monday morning show from WGTD. Don't panic. Greg Berg is here. I'm Dave McGrath. We have a bit of a role reversal today because Gregory, I think most of our regular listeners know, is very musically inclined, and he's very involved with the Racine Theater Guild, among other entities in the area. And he and his wife, Kathy, and other family members have a special show coming up this week at the Racine Theater Guild titled The Berg's Christmas Special. And we wanted to talk a little bit about that and celebrate that. And so Greg and I, we've known each other. I've been here 25 years as of November 22nd.
Wow, happy anniversary.
Thanks. So we've known each other real long, but I never really found out when and how you discovered you had the gifts you have musically, singing, playing piano, saber light dancing, whatever you do.
Oh, you want to know? Okay. Well, let me fill you in just a little bit. And let me also add that this is Dave Cole's idea that we do a morning show about this upcoming special.
That's so. Right. We got a very stern memo
right,
to promote the Greg Berg Christmas special.
Okay, so we're agreeing with the boss and doing as he wishes. So, but glad to be able to talk about this. So, as a very, very young child, my parents noticed that I had a real interest in music. They really first noticed it when my mom and dad both loved to listen to music. Neither were really trained musicians, but loved music and lots of different kinds of music. And when my dad would put on a record, I would just come into the room and just be transfixed by whatever was playing on there, whether it was Pete Seeger or whoever. He had Roger Wagner Chorale. I mean, he listened to all kinds of different things, and they could just really tell that I was absolutely caught up in it, just loved music. And so at the age of 4, they started me on piano, and we lived in a very small town of about 600 people, but by maybe divine providence, a piano teacher lived right across the street. And so I started piano at that really young age, even before we owned a piano, actually. And when we moved to Decorah, Iowa, when I was 5, we were also blessed to have very, very close by a wonderful piano teacher. So I continued my studies and eventually started studying organ as well. And at the tender age of 7, I was already playing organ at church once in a while. In fact, age 8, I played the organ for the whole Christmas Eve service. So I'm not saying it was great. I'm sure it wasn't, but I really had these opportunities to really kind of explore that gift. In another bit of divine providence, I really didn't, I mean, I certainly enjoyed singing in church choir and school choir and stuff, but it really wasn't until I was in high school and we moved to another relatively small town in Iowa, Atlantic, right between Des Moines and Omaha. And in that little town of about 8,000 was an amazing voice teacher named Sherry Carl. And so I studied voice with her, and she unlocked this voice that I had absolutely no idea I had. And at the time, I thought it was great, but I did not appreciate what a miracle that was, that in this little town in Iowa, there was this wonderful voice teacher who could have been teaching at any college. I mean, she was that wonderful, but she was teaching elementary music in her hometown and taught private voice students, and we just had no idea how incredibly fortunate we were. So that was really the start of my experience as a really serious singer, and I did that all the way through high school and went to college and majored in music, and music has been a really important part of my life ever since.
So let's take you back to when you're 4 years old, and let's unlock another secret. Greg's first name is actually David.
Yeah.
So here at the radio station, it's Dave McGrath. It's, well, Greg Berg, but David Gregory Berg. It's Dave Cole, and our engineer is Dave Janzer. So the joke is, if you walk in the office and just call out Dave, somebody will answer.
Yeah.
So when you're 4 years old, did your parents, what did they call you, Greg or Dave?
They called me Greg right from the start. And it was because on my mom's side, we had three, well, at that point, just two generations of Ron, a son and father and son, Ron. And so it was Big Ron and Little Ron. And eventually there was a third who was Baby Ron. And so all the way through, you always had to talk about Big Ron or Little Ron. And so they didn't want me to be Little David, but they liked David Gregory Berg. So that's what they named me. So I'm named after my father. But they, right from day one, they called me Greg.
So you're 4 years old, and they say, David, we're going to teach you or get you taught how to play piano. How do you react when you're 4 years old? You're not even in grade school yet, correct?
Right, yeah. No, I don't think I quite understood it. And actually, I mean it literally, too. We didn't even own a piano then. We did have a piano at the church across the street where my dad was the pastor. So when I was actually playing, I had to do that over at church. At home, all I had was a cardboard facsimile of a keyboard, which of course was pretty worthless to practice on, but I suppose it was better than nothing. But I was excited, and she was a very, very good teacher. She was a relatively young woman, you know, probably college age or young adult. I mean, I'm not really sure. And actually, I should add that a couple of years ago, when I returned to that little town of Colton for the funeral of a really beloved family friend, my first piano teacher was there. Oh. And so we were reunited for probably the first time in 35, 40 years or so. And it was really neat to see her again and to thank her for giving me such a good start.
So, and then as you get older, how do you drift towards, I think, again, most of our regular listeners know Gregory is a big opera fan. How do you drift towards opera? Most kids your age would drift towards the current music of the day.
Sure.
What their peers were listening to. So how did you pick and choose the kind of music that you really wanted to embrace and love?
Right. I would say that, like as a grade schooler, I was not, I think the first thing that happened was I really became really interested in more kind of classical music in general, if not specifically opera. And that partly came because I was growing up in the town of Decorah with Luther College right down the road, down the street. And my mom was actually the secretary of the chair of the music department, Weston Noble. She was his first ever secretary. And I think that was part of why they knew that all these things were going on, like band concerts. That's what I especially loved. And many times my parents would drop me off when I was 8, 9, 10 years old, just drop me off, and I would go to these Luther College band concerts, and I would wander up to the very front row, sit right by the percussion section, and just be transfixed. I mean, I loved those band concerts so much. And I loved concerts by the Nordic Choir as well, and I would go to those as well and just drink it all in. And I had really good music teachers in school as well. So I always had much more of an interest in that sort of thing. I will say the first record I bought with my own money was Diana Ross and the Supremes, I Hear a Symphony, because I saw the Supremes on TV one time, and I've always had a real weakness for three-part female harmony. So I did at least have that interest, but my first love was clearly sort of classical stuff. And then when I had this great teacher in high school, she was operatically inclined, and she really unlocked this voice inside of me that was really kind of operatic in nature. It's like that's what I was built to do. I will say, however, it really wasn't until I went to college, to Luther, and my best friend from growing up in Decorah, who was also there, my roommate, Marshall Anderson, he was an opera nut from very early on, and he's the one who really sealed the deal. I mean, we would listen to his favorite opera records in our room, and I realized, oh my gosh, this is the best. This is the greatest music ever written, and I would give anything to be able to sing it. So
your parents originally steered you towards the piano. Is that still your instrument of choice, or did you have other interests before you just stuck with the piano and organ?
It was pretty much piano right from the start, and organ. My formal training is very, very limited, but I know my way around the pipe organ, but piano is where I really feel the most comfortable. I remember during junior high, the orchestra leader sought me out and asked if I wouldn't want to learn string bass and become part of the junior high orchestra, who they practiced before school, and I was not interested in getting up that early. And so I lied and told them my parents said no. And I have some regret about that, because once in a while I've had experiences where I've been like a pianist playing with an orchestra, or even once or twice with a band. And I love sort of the workings of it. It's like a big, wonderful musical machine, all the different instruments joining together. And I think I would have probably gotten a real kick out of it. But no, I never pursued any kind of wind instrument or anything, or string instrument. I'll tell you something. During J-term one year at Luther, I took Suzuki violin for my J-term course. I was the worst in the class, absolutely the worst in the class. So that was not my destiny, that's for sure.
You mentioned a few times that this first voice coach of yours unlocked this voice that you have. So you didn't know it was there. You didn't know you could sing. You weren't singing along with the radio with your dad's records.
No, I knew I could sing. In fact, that was actually something also really early on. As a youngster of just, 3 years old, 4 years old, when there would be like a ladies' aid or something at church, and then there would be entertainment afterwards, so to speak, a lot of times I would be the entertainment, and they would bring me over, and I would be, this little boy, and I would usually stand on the piano bench right next to the lady who played the piano, and I would sing Jesus Loves Me or whatever at the top of my lungs, and during church, the liturgy parts that were sung, I would sing those at the top of my lungs. So yeah, I always loved singing, and I had a very good ear and a decent voice, but this teacher, when I was in high school, was the one who really helped me unlock all that was there. I mean, I was a relatively shy person, and kind of sang in a sense as a shy person. I just didn't know what it took to actually, sing with my full voice. I mean, to breathe really deep and then just let loose. And she just unlocked that for me. And most people can't just open their mouths and make an operatic sound. And some people aren't destined for that. But if you have sort of the right set of pipes, it's a possibility. And it was for me.
If you're just tuning in, I'm Dave McGrath, and you're hearing Greg Berg on the other end of the interview partnership here. He's got a Christmas special coming up at the Racine Theater Guild. We just got a little bit of his background. So all that training and background, it brought you to where you are, and you're very active in the music community in both Racine and Kenosha. How long have you been involved with the Racine Theater Guild specifically?
That goes back almost 25 years. I forget now. I actually looked it up very recently, and it was maybe 2002 or something like that. Before that, actually, in the mid-90s, Kathy and I were part of the volunteer corps of ushers at the Guild, and that's something that we really enjoyed doing for a long time. And I should say that Kathy has been a part of the Guild in a lot of different capacities, including several stints on the board of directors, and she coordinates the box office volunteers and has been really busy and on the stage. I was brought in, again, maybe it was 2002, and I believe the first thing I was asked to be music director for was a wonderful summertime review called Grand Night for Singing, which was a celebration of Rodgers and Hammerstein. And I really enjoyed doing that. I had also never really done something like that before, but I love Rodgers and Hammerstein. It was a great place for me to start, and I've been doing it ever since, and every single season that there have been shows on the Guild stage, I have directed at least one musical show. And I did do a count the other day, and I believe it is 42 productions of 35 different musicals. So that means, you know, once in a while, like, we repeat The Wizard of Oz, or we repeat Mary Poppins, or we repeat A Christmas Carol. So that's why it's, but I count each of those as a production, because they're each a different cast, and you're just rehearsing it all over again. So it's been a lot over the years, and it's been a tremendous pleasure.
And the Theater Guild has something called the Signature Spotlight Series. And this year, this is the first time you've done this.
Yes.
So tell us about the Berg's Christmas Special, which comes up this Wednesday, December 17th at 7 p.m. We'll tell you how to get tickets here in just a little bit.
Great.
Whose idea was it? How long did it take to come about, and how long is it going to run?
Yeah. So first of all, I'll say that the Signature Spotlight Series was designed, and this began several years ago, and it's been under the direction of a wonderful young musician by the name of Rob Cruz, who is the choir director at Union Grove High School. He's absolutely marvelous, and people remember him on the Guild stage for being Bert in Mary Poppins and a number of other leading roles. He's great and a wonderful musician, and he was entrusted with this thing called the Signature Spotlight Series, and it was designed to be able to showcase people who maybe can't be in regular productions, because to be in a production at the Guild, you have to be able to commit, you know, a number of weeks to extensive rehearsal, and some people, their personal or work lives just do not allow that. And so we had some really talented people who nevertheless just could not be part of that aspect of the Guild. So the Spotlight Series was really designed for that, to kind of give performance opportunities to people beyond our sort of stable of frequent performers, if you will. And it's really worked out quite nicely, and there's usually maybe a Halloween-themed show, and there have been Christmas-themed shows before, and so on. And actually, during COVID, one of the first actual performances that happened when everything else was shut down was that they did a Christmas Signature Spotlight concert, if you will, and Kathy and I were involved. And it was really, really terrific. And so, and because we were a part of that, maybe that's why Rob and Doug thought of this possibility. And Rob just wanted to kind of let go of it and have one of these concerts where he wasn't in the business of auditioning and then choosing music and putting it all together. I mean, it's an enormous undertaking. It really is. So, and I jumped at the chance. I will say Kathy did not jump in the same way I did. She always has a more level head than I do, and she knows that this is an incredibly busy time of the year for me because of all of the stuff that I have going on between Carthage, where I teach, and the sing-along Messiah that happened yesterday, and the Kenosha Pops concert, and so on. It is a busy, busy season for me. But this was going to be coming after all of that, and so I, with rosy optimism, figured it wouldn't be that big a deal. We'd be able to do it, and so I said yes, and she's coming along for the ride, and I think slowly but surely she's enjoying the idea more and more. But anyway, so we were asked to do this earlier this year. I said yes, and what I said right from the start was, but I would certainly not want to be in the spotlight start to finish. I mean, that really would be crazy at this time of year for me to be trying to put together a whole thing that was just, you know, Greg Berg singing or Greg and Kathy singing. So I said I would really want to bring along some other people along in the spirit of these Signature Spotlight Series concerts. So we are going to be inviting family and some friends to be part of this. And And it kind of feels like a cast of thousands, but it really isn't. But it's a really neat array of people. First of all, we've invited family. And so Kathy's sister Polly, who has been a part of the Theater Guild, but it's been many, many years. Boy, maybe it's been 20 years since she's been on the stage. Maybe not quite that long, but it's been a long time since she's been on the stage of the Guild. She's going to be singing along with her daughter Lorelei, who is our niece and very, very talented singer, and Polly's husband Mark as well. And then my niece from my side of the family, my sister's daughter Aiden, who lives and works and sings in Chicago along with her wife, Marie, they're going to be coming up. They sing so beautifully together. They do a singing Advent calendar over Facebook every year, and it's just one beautiful favorite after another. So I'm so happy they've made time in their schedule to be part of this as well. Our dear friend Kate Potter-Barrow, with whom we comprise a trio called Caritas, she will be with us. It will be singing a number of things. And then I have invited several of my former voice students who are in the area. One of them is Fletcher Paulson, who is the choir director at Prairie School, and his friend Andrew Scott, who is a music teacher in the elementary school there. They're going to be joining us. And then from farther back, maybe kind of half a generation earlier, a young man named Nick Berudian, who I taught all the way through high school and college. In fact, I worked with Nick when he was a boy soprano at Holy Communion. That was his school where I've been the minister of music since 1988. And Nick is going to be there as well. And I'm especially excited about Nick because one of my songs that got published is called Great and Glorious Light. And Nick is the very first person I sang that with. It was Thanksgiving Day. Kathy chased me out of the house because she was trying to get Thanksgiving dinner ready, and I was just kind of in the way. So, you know, get out of here. Go to church. We had just gotten a grand piano at church. So, okay, I'm going to just run down the street to Holy Communion and play the grand piano and enjoy myself. And that song just kind of plopped into my lap, Great and Glorious Light. And I called up Nick and said, I have this new song, and I think it'd be fun for us to sing. And Nick was in high school at the time. And so that Sunday, we sang Great and Glorious Light together at church. And so all these years later, about 25 years later, we'll be singing Great and Glorious Light on this program. And last and certainly not least, wonderful violinist Ann Heidi, who I work with quite a lot. She is going to be part of the program as well, playing a couple of things. And actually, really last and really not least, Santa Claus is going to pay a visit as well. A friend of ours named Tony Lizaldi, who's been on the stage of the Guild a lot, he has quite a few gigs over the holidays playing Santa Claus, and he's going to be joining us as well, and we're going to be having a little conversation with Santa, with Tony, really, just finding out what it's like to be Santa Claus, what it's like when, you know, little kids climb on your lap, and, you know, what kind of promises do you make to them, and what is that experience like, what have been some of your most memorable interaction, so I'm really excited about that as well.
This is the WGTD Morning Show, and today Greg Berg is the interviewee, not the interviewer. My name is Dave McGrath. So let's set the stage then for listeners literally and figuratively who are going to go to the show, which is this Wednesday night, 7 o'clock. If you want to get tickets, racinetheater.org online. When they walk into the Theater Guild, what are they going to see on stage? Is this going to be an Andy Williams special? Is this going to be a little more simple?
Right. Well, yeah, not Andy Williams. Yeah, no choreography, I'm afraid. Well, first of all, the stage is going to be set for our current production, which is the best Christmas pageant ever. And I knew that right from the start. And actually, when I heard that, I was a little worried because, well, is it going to be just like a somebody's kitchen, or, you know, is it going to, you know, what's that going to look like? It's actually an absolutely beautiful set, and it works absolutely perfectly as the physical backdrop. And fortunately, they left enough space so that the Guild's grand piano can be wheeled out on stage, because that is one thing I said. I said, I will only do this if I can play the grand piano. I do not want to be playing some little electronic keyboard. I need the grand piano to feel at home. It's going to be a relatively informal kind of setting, and The various singers will gather around the grand piano. That's where I'll be seated for the whole evening. It's going to be about 90 minutes altogether. And we'll have, you know, various chats along the way, and it'll almost be like a Christmas Eve in the parlor. And, you know, various friends and family are gathered around making music together. And there will be actually several points in the evening when we will be inviting the audience to be singing along as well. We don't do enough singing together in public, and so that was really important for me to include that. And I should add that one other interesting facet to the program, and including all these holiday songs, both sacred and secular, I'm also put together a little medley called December at the Guild, because the month of December has often been devoted to really wonderful family-themed shows, not necessarily Christmas at all. So shows like Mary Poppins and The Wizard of Oz and Annie and Oliver and The Sound of Music. And so we're going to be highlighting a few of those shows as well. And that will, to some extent, include some audience participation that should be fun.
Are we going to hear a lot of holiday standards? Are we going to hear some different songs?
Yeah, well, first of all, there'll be plenty of standards like White Christmas, We Need a Little Christmas, and so on. And then there'll be a few Greg Berg originals sprinkled in there. My Great and Glorious Light, I already mentioned, another original of mine called Pace, which means peace, several other things. And I'm also really excited about the what will amount to the finale, which will be Silent Night. It will culminate with the whole audience singing Silent Night. But ahead of that, all of these different groups that are part of it are going to be singing alternate versions of Silent Night. I mean, when you actually go digging, you find that there are literally hundreds of different translations of that great original text of Stille Nacht. And so I've done lots of digging and found some of these wonderful alternate lyrics for Silent Night, and they're not funny or strange or anything. They're just beautiful alternates from the ones that you find in your standard hymnal. And so there will be some of those alternate verses, probably that people have never heard before, that are absolutely beautiful, before we all join together in singing the three verses that pretty much the whole world knows. So should be kind of fun.
All right. So we are talking about the Berg's Christmas special, the first ever.
Yes.
I'm a little surprised that it's the first ever, but I'm glad to see they're doing it. Are you hoping to make it an annual staple?
Well, I don't know that it should be annual, but I think it would be really fun to do this again and again and again. In part, if nothing else, because first of all, I have other family that can't be here for this part because they live a long way away, and I have so many former students that I dearly love that I would love to include. And you know, I could have cast this concert probably three times over very easily, but, you know, we didn't want it to be a sprawling four-hour concert and so on. I will say that my dad's last church was a country church outside of Beloit, Luther Valley Lutheran, and very soon after we moved there, the tradition started for our family to do a Christmas concert every single year, year after year after year, my mom and dad and all of my siblings. And that became a really treasured experience for us and for the congregation. And so I feel like I am channeling back to that really precious part of my family's past. And both my mom and dad are gone now, but I should think that they probably are looking down and smiling at the idea of another Berg family Christmas, if you will.
Very good. So we're going to wrap it up, give everybody the information they need. The Berg's Christmas special this Wednesday, that's the 17th of December, 7 p.m. at the Racine Theater Guild. And the online site is racinetheater.org. It's always good talking to you, Greg, finding out a little bit about your background. I'm involved in the music business, but as I always tell people, I have no talent. I can't sing, I can't dance, I can't play an instrument.
You have no talent for music, maybe,
right?
But
and I'm always envious of people with that talent, with that gift, and you're one of the most gifted I know. So best of luck on the special, And let's hope it becomes maybe not an annual thing, but regular at the Theater Guild.
That would be fun. And it's been fun talking with you, David. It's a great privilege to be your colleague. You are listening to The Morning Show on WGTD HD, your gateway to public radio. I'm Gregory Berg, and now an interview that comes from The Morning Show archive. And we're going to spend the next few minutes of WGTD's Morning Show talking about a lovely new children's book called Merry and Hark, A Christmas Story. And it is by someone who has really made a name for herself in the field of children's books. Her name is April Genevieve Tucholsky, and she has already, to her credit, a number of widely known and highly regarded books for children, including Beatrice Likes the Dark, Rebecca the White House Raccoon, The Secret Life of Hidden Places, among others. Again, this latest book is Merry and Hark, A Christmas Story, featuring beautiful illustrations by Rebecca Santo, and the lovely writing of my morning show guest, April Genevieve Tucholsky. April Genevieve Tucholsky, we welcome you to the morning show.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
I really am excited about this opportunity. I just love speaking to people who create beautiful children's books, and this is certainly one of them. In the brief biography of you that's on the dust jacket, it says you grew up on a farm where you spent much of your time wandering the prairie and daydreaming. And I suspect that you've opted to make mention of that rather than, you know, where you went to college and what awards you've won. You want us to know this about you because it probably is a very important impact on the fact that you've become a writer. I'm guessing so anyway.
Truly. I can tell you where my farm was. It was in South Dakota, very close to Minnesota. And it does come through all of my writing. And in Merry and Hark, too, because the story is about, it's about nature, it's about an owl, it's about trees. And growing up on the plains and being so close to, so tied to nature, you know, it's a really... it really formed my writing in a very distinct way, I think.
I heard in an interview you did, or a Q&A of some sort, about one of your previous books, you making mention of the fact that you thought that there were not enough children's books out there in the world that could speak to or tell the story of introverts, that introverts are those youngsters that sometimes get kind of left off to the side or left out of the mix, and in so many cases children's books are kind of exciting and splashy and loud, and you obviously felt a need to create children's books with a different sort of color and mood. Is that in part because you yourself were or are or have been an introvert, or does that desire stem
definitely
from something else?
No, that's me, that I'm an introvert. And you can see, so this, my first book, Beatrice Likes the Dark, is about a girl who's very much an introvert, then she has an extrovert sister. And even the girl in the illustrations looks like me, with the blonde hair and the round black glasses, Beatrice. And that was very much inspired by, you know, by me and my childhood and how shy I was and... you know, and how foreign cities were to me for quite a long time, and just so much, just felt so overwhelming, so much noise. So, and then in Merry and Hark, too, you see it a little bit. You know, I mean, I tried to make the book more pro-nature than anti-city, but you see the little owl go into the city and how overwhelmed she is. And I felt like that for a long time, too.
Interesting. Yes, let's talk for a moment about Merry and Hark, and then I hope we'll have time to just ask a couple of questions of more overarching nature in terms of how you come up with your
intriguing ideas and how you put your books together. But by all means, let's talk for a moment about Mary and Hark, A Christmas Story, which tells the story of a small owl by the name of Mary, M-E-R-R-Y, Mary, a northern saw-whet owl. And at several points in the book, contrast is drawn between this type of owl and maybe larger, more flamboyant or dramatic-looking owls. Tell us more about this main character and then ultimately what happens to Mary.
So this story was inspired by a real event. In November of 2020, a little northern saw-whet owl was found nesting inside the giant Rockefeller Center Christmas tree, a Norway spruce. And she was treated at a wildlife rehabilitation center and released back into the wild. But this was the first year of the pandemic, 2020, and I think this story resonated with a lot of people as the year drew to a close, because, you know, this tiny saw-whet owl, they're only about, you know, the size of your fist. They're so tiny. If she could survive in a new world, so could we. And then I saw this article come out, and I immediately started writing this book. And I think it's really important that Mary is such a small owl, and she feels so much, you know, so much more insignificant than the big owls that I mention in the book, the great horned owl and the snowy owl. But all the same, she goes on a grand adventure and succeeds, survives. And I think this is really important to have her be so small. And it was, you know, it's the real story too.
Right. I think one of the things that is especially compelling about this character is that she loves her life in the woods, especially when she gets to nestle in what she calls my favorite tree, a Norway spruce named Hark. She was proud and strong and gentle. And so she loves that life, and yet there is part of her that would like to go on a grand adventure like those she has heard of from larger and more dramatic owls. And I just think that's really intriguing to think about somebody who might be an introvert or might really appreciate a quiet, simple life. That doesn't mean there isn't part of them that longs for something more.
It's very The Hobbit, isn't it? You know, small creatures can do big things. It's very much a Hobbit theme. I think that's probably where what I was getting inspired from as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, your protagonist ultimately is very, very surprised in this dramatic moment when this lovely tree comes crashing down because it has been harvested and is brought into the big city to be hoisted up as a beautiful Christmas tree centerpiece. And but she has to try to make sense of this brand new world in which she finds herself. You said that you didn't want to make this anti-city, but I bet that was a really tricky line to follow in terms of making this about something more than that.
Yes, it was. I, you know, I went back and forth a bit with my editor. I think my illustrator Rebecca Santo did such a good job of walking that line as well. And I also didn't want to make this book too much about, like, shaming people for cutting down trees to make Christmas trees. You know, it's a delicate line. I don't like trees being cut down in general either, but people should be able to celebrate Christmas. So it took some fiddling to get it right, and I hope I did.
I think you did. There's actually a beautiful spread where we see this transplanted Norway spruce looking beautiful, and obviously being an inspiring sight to those around her. And Mary sees it through the window and says she is beautiful, that being the tree. They, meaning people, are trying to bring the forest to the city, I think. They are trying to bring the stars. And it's interesting to think about how that might be part of what is behind this tradition that we have. Tell us a little more about the collaboration between you and your illustrator, who is obviously very, very gifted. Again, her name is Rebecca Santo, and what she's created visually is breathtaking. How did the two of you work together on this?
So I, she was, so my editor asked me what kind of art I was looking for, and I sent her some examples, and then they found Rebecca. And I saw, the first I saw was sketches that came in, and I loved them. And I was so happy with them. And so then she, yes, she illustrated this book. She's fantastic. She's so wonderful. She's so talented. I actually wept when I saw her illustrations because I felt like she'd given my story more meaning. Like I understood my own story better after seeing her artwork. It was incredible. It's picture books, though, and in children's books are so wonderful, just so magical for this because I can see my words come to life in a way that I haven't before in all my writing. I've been writing for some time, and I really, really love doing children's books.
We're speaking with April Genevieve Tucholsky and talking about her most recent book, which is a lovely new children's book called Mary and Hark, A Christmas Story, a really beautiful, in more ways than one, children's picture book. I think a lot of people from the outside looking in assume that putting together a children's book is much, much simpler than in fact it is. Describe, first of all, kind of where your ideas come from, your initial ideas, and then typically what you have to do with those ideas in order to have them, you know, ultimately become a beautiful and effective children's book.
So, as I said, this story was inspired by a real event. My previous children's book, Beatrice Likes the Dark, was inspired by my own childhood. So I have a lot of ideas and a lot of inspirations for everything that I write. But it's a long process. I sold this book in January 2021, so it was a full 2 years of perfecting the writing, because children's books, it's like poetry. You know, you have a very few amount of words, maybe 500 to 1,000 words in a book, 1,000 being the upper limit, which my book is. And so it's very much about picking the right word and then having it all align with the illustrator. But it's a beautiful process. I loved every minute of it.
What about the matter of crafting the story in such a way that a youngster will make sense of it? When we're above, you know, See Jane Run, when we're into something that's a potentially a bit more sophisticated, maybe a story that is highly symbolic or metaphorical or whatever. I mean, what do you think about in terms of making sure that this is a story with whom the typical very young reader can and will relate?
I think about what I wanted when I was a child. That helps a lot. And I think children are sophisticated and they understand complex emotions. And so I didn't shy away from that. But since I loved fantasy as a child, I have that in here. I talk about Mary and the owls telling stories of the hero owls. And there's a magical element in it as well that I at least responded to when I was young. And you know, I think also the illustrations are so important because I remember the illustrations of the picture books that I was read to so vividly. Having the text, the words be very, very clear, but also simple is the perfect balance, if that makes sense.
You made mention of your editor and yes. How maybe the two of you went back and forth in a couple of aspects of this story. I don't know if you want to talk more specifically about that or leave it in more general terms, but I think it would be really interesting for us to better understand that relationship, that connection between author and editor, which I think, again, most of us have maybe a clearer notion of when it comes to a novel or a work of nonfiction versus a children's book like this.
Yes. So really the only element that was tricky was figuring out exactly how afraid to make Mary of the city, because when you're telling children a story, you know, you have to be very careful with that. I wanted to present nature, you know, in a positive way, and write the story so that it felt true. And an owl being in a city would be terrifying for that owl, but also not to make children afraid of the city. So that took a little bit of finessing, but I think we did it. It turned out good. So
when you are relatively done with a story, what do you end up presenting? In a sense, for an editor to look at. And are we talking about something that has any illustrations yet whatsoever, or does all of that element come in much later?
It largely comes in much later, though when I'm writing just the text, I will occasionally put in an illustration idea. Because sometimes if I don't want to say something in the text and waste words that way, then I can say the illustration shows it. And then it helps me figure out how to use my words in the right way, because words are it's such a precious commodity in a children's book.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I really, really loved this book so much, and I am already excited about the youngsters to whom I'm going to give it as a gift, and I hope a lot of people will also seek it out as well. It's Mary and Hark, A Christmas Story, written by April Genevieve Tucholsky, and the illustrations are by Rebecca Santo. This is published by Algonquin Young Readers. Mary and Hark, Mary, M-E-R-R-Y, as befits this festive season. And April Genevieve Tucholsky, thank you so much, first of all, for giving the world this really, really exquisite book, and thank you for being my morning show guest. It was really fun to speak with you about it.
You're so welcome.
Tomorrow on The Morning Show, one of my guests is going to be Captain Eddie J. Williams III, who is a Corps officer and pastor with the Salvation Army, and we're going to be talking about their well-known Red Kettle fundraising campaign and all the good work that the Salvation Army does actually all year round. On Wednesday, from the archives, a conversation I recorded a couple of years ago with Laura Gelat, one of my all-time favorite Morning Show guests, retired history professor at the University of Wisconsin-Parkside. The topic for this particular conversation, of a little more personal nature, a book that she wrote called Helen Perry Curtis and the European Trip of a Lifetime. Helen Perry Curtis was the author of a once extremely popular and well-known book for young readers. And Laura Gelat ended up investigating her life and career, and a particular European trip that Ms. Curtis took that served as the inspiration for her best-known book. On Thursday, Dr. Art Searle will join us for his monthly visit to the program, his last visit of 2024, to offer his commentary and analysis of various current events and concerns. And on Friday, we'll finish out the hour by going to the archives for a conversation with Dr. Tom Knorr, longtime professor of history at Carthage College, who passed away earlier this year. Carthage has created a special memorial fund in his honor, and we thought it was a good opportunity for us to replay one of several conversations I had with Professor Knorr on The Morning Show, this one in which he offered his analysis and thoughts on the legacy of President John F. Kennedy. The Morning Show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock. You will find The Morning Show archive on our website, WGTD.org. Today is going to be a cloudy sky. We had some very dense fog this morning. We will see some windy conditions over the afternoon, and we're headed for a high of 49 degrees. It will be cloudy, windy, and mild overnight. The overnight low right around 30 degrees. It looks like tomorrow will be a cloudy and mild day as we have a high temperature of 43 degrees. And then over about Wednesday or Thursday, it looks like some snow is going to be possible, particularly on Thursday. And we will be cooler over the weekend. This is WGTD HD.